Good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome to everybody. I'm very pleased that today's shiur is being sponsored by Miriam Marcus. Le'ilu Nishma is both her mother, Liba Pesha Bat Natan Alea Shalom, whose yortzeit is, I believe, tomorrow, and also her grandfather, Natan Ben Moshe, Zichron Livrocha, whose yortzeit is on Tisha B'Av. We definitely appreciate Miriam being a stalwart member of the shiur here every week. We very much appreciate the sponsorship. Miriam and Phil and her family are close friends of ours as well, and I was privileged to meet her mother many times. She was a lovely lady. It should be Be'ezrat Hashem and Aliyah for the neshama. Miriam is also our regular reminder that everyone has to please turn their phones off. And Miriam reminds me, and I remind you, and every week somebody's phone goes off anyway. Which seems to be the menag, so that's okay. But thank you, Miriam, for the sponsorship. We should end good Torah le'ilu nishmatam. So, today is the last of our series of three shiurim dealing with Tfilas Kelim and modern technology. I think you're going to enjoy today, hopefully. We are dealing with the knotty question of electrical and electronic equipment in the kitchen, appliances. Do they or do they not need tefillah? Now, just to remind you, for the last two sessions, in the first session we looked at the basic principles of Tfilas Kelim, and we laid down some groundwork on things which will help us today as well, and we also looked at the issue of modern materials, which did not exist in the time of Chazal, aluminium, etc., etc., plastics. That's what we did in the first session. In the second session, last week, we looked at the issue of disposable Kelim, pans that we use for cooking and then throw away, and we widened the issue, broadened it to generally a little look at disposable kelim in other areas of halacha, making kiddush, kashrus issues, etc. That we dealt with last time. Today, I want to look at the issue of electrical kelim. If you ask poskim, they will tell you that the majority of shilas that they get about tfilas kelim are about electrical utensils and appliances. Do I have to toivel my toaster? Do I have to toivel my sandwich maker, etc.? So, in almost every single case, if you look at the instructions, they will tell you very clearly you may not immerse the equipment in water. Now, of course, if you wish to, that's your prerogative, but you will invalidate the warranty, that's for sure. That's a Hilchos Momonos question. And in many cases, you will also ruin the machinery. Now, common equipment that comes, that this shaila comes up with, of course, is kettles, urns, mixers, blenders, waffle makers, sandwich makers, George Foreman grills, which are those sort of little sandwich-looking grills that you can grill your meat on, coffee-making machines, especially the Keurig. The Keurig, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, coffee machine, is an absolute essential. If you go to anywhere in the Five Towns or Teaneck, everybody has a Keurig coffee machine in every room, it seems to me. Even I just popped into my bank in wherever it was in the Five Towns there. I've got a TD bank. They've got their coffee machine there. Everybody, you can't live without your Keurig coffee machine. The question is, are you allowed to have one if you're Jewish, or do you have to take it to the mikveh? And if you take it to the mikveh, then almost for sure it will not work afterwards. So let's deal with this issue. We've seen in the last couple of shiurim that metal and glass require tefillah. Glass on a rabbinic level, metal on a doraisa level, and if there is a clay, if there's clay suda, klisa uda, something that you use to either cook or serve the food, we saw last time that storage may be different. We may not have to toivel things that food is simply stored in a prior state, if you like, but anything that you use to serve or cook the food requires tefillah. Now, if you toivel electrical equipment, first of all, if you toivel it while it's plugged in, then you won't be coming back to any more shiurim after that. So please don't ever toivel anything when it's actually plugged in. But there are different kinds of equipment. If you toivel things that have heating elements, and you let them dry out well, we'll get back to that later, then very often they do work afterwards. Things with motors very often do not work, and anything with electronic equipment in it, superconductors, chips, digital displays, is usually fried very quickly. And the question is why? Now, I'm not an electrical engineer, but as far as I understand it, the basic issues are as follows. If something is still wet and it's plugged in to the mains, then there will likely be a short circuit. There are all sorts of resistors inside your equipment, and they regulate the flow of electricity, and if you have something wet, then the electricity will clearly take the path of least resistance and will bypass the circuit and will likely fry your machinery. That's one thing that can go wrong. A second thing that can go wrong is there are capacitors inside your equipment, and if it's ever been plugged in before, which you'll say, well, it's never been plugged in before because I just bought it in the shop, the answer is probably you're right, but not necessarily because it may have been tested in the factory. If it's ever been plugged in before, there will be electricity on a very small level stored in your capacitors inside the equipment. You may think it's turned off, and you may think it's not got a plug in the wall, but that electricity will go zap when you put it in the water and will also potentially fry the machinery. And the third issue is corrosion. Even if you let the thing dry out, and even if you have no problems right here and right now, water in contact with lots of the very sophisticated equipment inside your appliances may cause it to corrode. The corrosion itself may cause short circuits. It may wash away lubricants to make things go round. It may make strings brittle, etc. So even if it works tomorrow, the day after, a week, and a month later, it may only last 2 or 3 months as opposed to 2 or 3 years, which it was meant to last if you hadn't dipped it in the water. Now, we'll see halakhically, maybe that's what it is. Maybe the answer is when Jews buy equipment, it lasts for 2 months rather than 2 years. We'll see. We'll see how that works. But they are basically the problem. I want to suggest to you 17 solutions. Okay? I wanted to make something pretty comprehensive, and I got quite excited by the topic. Everyone gets excited by something, I suppose. And I put down 17 different ways of dealing with electronic equipment. What's that? Last week we talked about 18. I couldn't come up with an 18. Okay, so some of them we can deal with pretty quickly. Some of them are quite simple. Some of them are more complex. All of them reveal very interesting halachas and hilchos mikvah, which we don't often get a chance to talk about. But here you see the interface of halacha, modern technology, ancient halacha, and modern ideas. And also at the end we'll look at some hashkafic issues of haroma. You know, when are we playing games here? Are we really just trying to find loopholes? How does that work? So the first one, if you look here on the page one, in the middle, detachable components. This is not really a halachic issue, this is obvious. If you have a metal part to your appliance and it comes out easily, then take it out and toivel that. You don't have to toivel the whole thing. Toivel the bit that's metal that comes out. So that's the first thing that obviously is there. Blades in a food blender, you can just take the blades out. Grills in a toaster oven, you don't have to take your whole toaster oven. I'm talking about a proper oven and put the whole thing. The grills which touch the food, they come out. They can be removed and toiveled and put back in. Similarly, if there are metal parts to the equipment that don't touch the food, think of a crock pot. A crock pot which has a metal element, and then a pot that goes in the middle. Obviously the food doesn't come into contact with the metal. There's no requirement to toivel the metal crock pot that surrounds the pot. It's the ceramic pot that gets toiveled, and we talked about ceramics on a prior occasion. So that's easy. But in many cases, that won't help. The metal parts are integral. They don't come out, and you won't be able to follow that solution. So that's solution number one. Solution number two is, don't buy it! Maybe Jews are not meant to have certain things. Let's face it, halacha doesn't give a green light to everything. There are things in life that you can't have if you're Jewish. And they are way overwhelmed, I think, overweighed by all the wonderful things we can have and do have. But maybe the answer is you have to live without a toaster or you have to live without a Keurig or whatever it is, and you'll find some other way to eat your food. Have a look here in Rav Vosna, in the Shevet HaLevi number one. He says, Asha sha'al to be inyan dud, shebevashlim bo maim, on page one, number one. These pots that you cook, urns that you cook water in, are you electric? Hechlit naik bezeh beinyan tfilat kelim, ki chelik ha-elektri shebo, yachol litkalkel, are you there, am I in dushat tfilat? Obvious question. You'll ruin the appliance. Kvar nishati alzeh, ukiyote bezeh, harbeh pa'amim. He says, so many people ask me about this. Upashut, he says, it's obvious to me. De'im hu kederish ha-mevatlim bo, if it is the pot that you cook in, and there are different appliances where you might actually plug in the pot itself, or shar klei suda, or it's another kind of klei suda, ein shum heter lepatro mitzvila b'chashash kilkul chelik ha-elektri. You've got no heter. How can you suddenly say that, well, you know, what can I do? It'll break. The answer is, don't buy it. Buy something else, and you'll live without it. You can't just override a Torah mitzvah. Hushchichi ayom. All these pots, he says, very common barazel, shitzolim behem, betocham alidei reshet, chutei, electric, they've got electrical wiring in the shibatocho, shibavadai, it's kakel alidei amayim.
For sure it'll get ruined by water, but what can you do? Loi ra'iti shum eitz lishtamesh bo. I have no way to advise you to use them. Rak im yikvu achutim achrei hatvila. If you can put the electrics in after the tvila, then sure, that's good. But if you can't, I'm sorry, there are some things that a Jew can't have, and that's water. Okay, that's an easy answer, and some people follow that answer, and they just will use something else. That's answer number two. And I think we have to take that seriously. That may be actually, to some degree, part of the answer to the whole problem. Answer number three, toivel it and hope for the best. So, as I said to you before, for items with simple heating elements, immersing them in water, for sure will invalidate the warranty, but it will not normally ruin them permanently. If you leave them to dry for a long time, it could take a week or more for them to dry, the water will evaporate and they normally work afterwards. Now, I'm not making any representations that they will work, and people have toivled things and they didn't work, people have toivled things and they did work. As I said to you, motors are usually not going to be happy, and electronic stuff is almost certainly going to fry. I brought you in source number three, in footnote three rather, Rabbi Alfred Cohen, who was the editor of the RJJ Journal for many years, has an interesting line. He quotes there, he says, toilet and hope for the best. Even if the appliance smokes a bit the first time it is used, it will last just as long and work just as well as any other. Okay, you know something? Each one has his tolerance level. I personally am not comfortable with smoking electrical equipment, but sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You have to make sure, obviously, it's fully dry. I must confess to you, I have done this with basic things. Toaster, sandwich toaster, urn, dried them out. Sometimes people use a hairdryer. Rav Belsky used to be very into using hairdryers on these things. I must confess to you, in my personal experience, it's been fine, and other things have broken on the machine way before the problem with the element. So very many people have success in this, and obviously they need to make sure that it's fully dried, but in many cases, as I said, they will be ruined or at least partially broken by immersion. So that's one option, and I would say many people do that, but it won't work for everything. Four. Now, this is very interesting. There are poskim who say, listen, if it will definitely be ruined, then you don't have to toivel it. There is no mitzvah to toivel something that will be ruined in the process of tefillah. Which is very interesting. Rav Shechter in YU and Rav Willig in YU and others as well. I brought you in a footnote an article in Tchumim from a few years ago that very much supports this opinion. Take the view that, look, if it'll get ruined, you don't have to toivel it. So why? So the question is, well, was this a svara? This is an idea? Well, why would you not have to toivel it just because? Why is Rav Vosner not correct? And the answer is, well, you can't buy it. So Rabbi Aryeh Leibovitz, who is probably very well known to many people, he has a brilliant regular Shir on YU Torah, which is his 10-minute halacha series. There are thousands of them there. I really strongly recommend them. He gave a Shir on this I listened to. It wasn't actually the 10-minute halacha. It was another one. He thinks the svara of Rav Shecht and Rav Willig is as follows. There is a Torah mitzvah, a chiyuv, a positive mitzvah, to toivel the equipment. However, the prohibition on using it before you toivel it is, according to most poskim, a rabbinic prohibition. It's there to stop you from forgetting to toivel it. It's a rabbanon, you're not allowed to use it till it's toivel. He comes along and says, it must be that this svara says that the chazal never made a gezeira. They generally never make gezeiras on things which are unusual. It's like shchichi. That's one of the rules of rabbinic gezeiras. They would not have made a gezeira on an unusual piece of equipment which will be ruined in the process of tefillah in any event. And therefore, it could be there's still a Torah mitzvah to toivel it if you can, but there's no prohibition to use it if you can't. And that's the way it works. And in fact, we see this in the Avnei Nezer as well. There is precedent for this. Look at number two. He brings a comparison. He's not talking about electrics here. He's talking about other things that you will be ruined by tefillah. V'hinei ha-Mordechi. He quotes the Mordechi in Hilchas Tzitzit. Kasav, number two. The B'Shabbos ain issa lilbosh talis. On Shabbos there is no issur to wear a talit without tzitzit. Kevin sha'asur la'asot tzitzit, because you're not allowed to make tzitzit on Shabbat. As mutar lilbosh b'lo tzitzit, then he would be allowed to wear without tzitzit. Again, think of the comparison. It's very like tefillah. There is a positive mitzvah to put tzitzit on a beged, and there is a prohibition to wear the beged if you don't have the tzitzit on. But if I physically cannot make tzitzit, halachically cannot make tzitzit because it's Shabbat, I can't tie the ties, So what does the Torah want from me? The Torah tells me that I have to put tzitzit on, but the Torah tells me that I'm not allowed. So it must be, says the Avnei Nezer, quoting the Mordechai, that I don't have a problem wearing this without tzitzit. Kevan she'ein issa l'ilbosh b'lo tzitzit, rak mitzvah. There's no issa to wear it, there's just a mitzvah to put the tzitzit on, and the Torah told me I can't do it right now. K'she'ein yochel, that's a mitzvah, lo nesa, but zeh halavisha. Makes a lot of sense. Well, if he's there, but Tfilas Kalim, so too is Tfilas Kalim. Again, he's not talking about electrical directly. It's the 19th century. Nami kashe'enu yachal itzbol, if you're not able for whatever reason to time it, mutal ishtamesh below tefillah. It must be okay to wear, to use without tefillah, by a comparison with tzitzit. Now, I see some of you already making funny faces. You don't like that. It is a minority opinion in the poskim. Most poskim are not happy with that. Most Israeli poskim are not happy with that. And even according to Rav Shech, the Ravilik, it'll only work if it's definite that it will be ruined. If you're not sure, then someone's going to have to be the korban and try. Okay, you have to get a friend to buy it, try it out, and if you know, empirically you've proven that they get ruined, then it'll fall into this. Yes. It does.
Because if you have a
towel
without
it,
you can't wear it.
Correct. Rav Ozner will say that there's no compound. These two things are not the same, and you shouldn't be wearing tzitzit on Shabbos anyway. You shouldn't be wearing a talis without tzitzit on Shabbos anyway. So technically, if you did, it's not the same level of ism. It doesn't mean you can do it. Yes.
So, is it definitely
yes. Yeah, but they put that for their own insurance. Good. I will tell you also that one of the reasons they put that on the instructions is if you have used it already and then you dip it in the water, then almost certainly it will fry because of the capacitors, like I said before, because there is electricity in it. But we, of course, are dipping it before we use it. I'm just telling you that many, many people have done it and tried and it worked. I'm not telling you what to do. But of course they're going to write that on because they, you can't take it back to the shop and say, I took it to the mikveh and now it doesn't work. Just one thing. Let's say you could toivel it and it will work, but some of it will break. Let's say you have an appliance and the clock will break. It's a digital clock. But otherwise it will work fine. It's achveis, I don't know, a tea maker of some kind. So, does that mean it's broken, or does that mean, okay, Jews use it, but without the clock? So, I don't think you'd have this hetter if it will basically work, but a little thing will break. But with Willig and Rav Shechter are makel on this, and others are as well. Yes?
Why didn't they try going in the direction that you'll have a big financial?
Well, you didn't have to buy it in the first place. It's your choice. You don't want a loss, then don't go to the shop.
You got it as a gift, wedding present.
Ah, a wedding present. Give it to the next guy as a wedding present. That's what we got. When we got married in 1991, I don't know if it was the in thing, we got 8 electric carving knives. You know, the kind you plug in and you carve a joint. Like, what are we going to do with 8 carving knives? Fleishik, you know. now where are we? Pesach Fleishik, you know, and we're running out of options now. You know, Pesach Milchik. And what are we going to do on Shabbos with an electric car? Put it on a Shabbos clock? So it sits on the table till like 11 o'clock and then it, you know, starts going off. So we gave them all away to our friends and said, you can worry about it. Fine. So that's one option. But I must say, this is taken seriously by a minority of poskim. And there are people who rely on this. And they say, look, if it's definitely going to break, but is it definitely going to break? That's the question. Next, perhaps the most famous tshuva on this, and we'll come back to Rav Breish a few times today, is the Chalkas Yaakov. Rav Yaakov Breish, who was a poskim in Switzerland in the mid-20th century, he has a tshuva on this, and he gives various different suggestions. The suggestion, we'll see him more in a few minutes, the suggestion we're looking here is as follows. Maybe he says it doesn't require tefillah because it's plugged into the wall, and by definition, although we'll see, not necessarily because you could run it on a battery pack, but we'll say it's plugged into the wall, and anything which is connected to the ground is not makabel tumah, doesn't pick up tumah on a halachic level, and therefore doesn't require tefillah. Let's have a look at his thinking. Very inventive, but does it work? Number 3. Be'inyan kli ha'asui lechamem tei, the cafe. Something which is meant to heat up tea and coffee, and it'll be important, we'll see soon, what specific thing he's talking about. See if we can work it out for now. Don't look at the English yet. Fine, so let's see. And he's going to describe it. La'at moi teo cafe. If you want to heat up tea and coffee, yesh ke'ed kli, there's a new kli, he says. Shemachamem al yidei koch hashmal, it'll electrically heat it. Umaos mahus kachu. This is how it works. Yesh chaticha matechet, there's a piece of metal. Aruka, chalula, which is twisted and is long. Va'ava nistik. And there are electrical wires inside the twisted metal which will heat up the metal. Because she writes in Levashel, Olechamem, Ezit Hashil, Tochvim Matechet, you dip this metal thing in, Letoch Akadera, into the pot or into the cup of tea, Ubetzad Hasheni Shalamatechet, the other side of the wire, Mukhubachut Aruch, there's a long electrical wire, kalu, which is coiled, Mukhutik Hashmal, the Oitachut, Tochvim Lakotel, and you put that into the plug in the wall. When the metal is connected to the wall, it connects to electricity, or it'll heat up or cook whatever you're cooking. Does this need to be toiveled or not? The problem is as follows. You can't put it into the water. If you put it into the water, okay, water goes into it, into the chutei hamash chashmal, and it ruins them, etc. Now, what is he talking about? An immersion coil heater. If you just take a peek over the page, just for a second, to page 3, I brought you a picture of what he's talking about. And they still sell them. They still sell them, and you can buy an immersion heater. You would have thought it would be quite dangerous, because it's rather hot metal without any, whatever, they still sell it. So go back to number 3 for a second. Look at what he says. Achei, lefi ani yaddaiti, I'm in the second paragraph. Yesh hetha boro lishtamesh afaloi tefila. I can think of a pretty obvious hetha that you wouldn't be able to use without tefila. Lefi amorva v'tshuva shvus Yaakov, and he goes back to the shvus Yaakov in the name of the Yad Ephraim. Now, we saw this last time, and the time before, let me just make a mention here. The Shvus Yaakov is the opinion that Tumah and Tara and Tfilas Kelim go together as a set. That anything which is not Makabel Tumah on a halachic level is, by definition, also does not require Tfilas Kelim. Now, we saw that that's not an obvious connection, and there are ways that Tumah and Tara and Tfilas Kelim are quite different. And there are things which are makabel tumah which do not require tefillah kelim, like cheres, like earthenware. And therefore, he says, if we, number one, assume that the Shvus Yaakov is correct, which is reasonable, there are many poskim that will go with that, and say that the two equate, there is a correlation. Now, let's quote the following case. The Kederish on the Choshes, if you have this copper utensil, Hakavu v'tanur, which is fixed to a range, to an oven, Betachoreb, to a winter range, Shenogim, Ain't a tzarich tefila. The minigas, we don't toivel these things because they're connected to the ground. But nafam tam lemina kavu shekavu nato b'tanur. Since it's fixed to the oven, v'atanur kavua b'karika, it's screwed down to the ground. It's affixed to the ground. Loi nase lechatchil ishtamesh b'hem ela b'mechuba b'karika. They are not made to be used other than when they are fixed to the ground. Okay, these ovens. The aim of tamim b'shum tumah, and therefore they don't become tame. Anything attached to the ground, by definition, the wall is attached to the ground. So if it's attached to the wall, then it's attached to the ground. It won't become tame. The inkain, benidon nidan. Therefore, in our case, it says kevan shematechet alazeh. Since this piece of metal nase lechatchila rakli hishtamish kushuhu mechubal lekoytel, it's only made to work when plugged in. It doesn't do anything unless you plug it in. Now, when you put it in your tea, you generally take out the plug. At least I would recommend that you do. I'm not sure you have to, but I think it's recommended. But that's not the point. The point is it doesn't do anything unless you plug it in. It's a useless lump of metal unless you plug it in. Even when you do, even though you use it when it's not particularly specifically attached, since it's only useful as its kli, it has its identity when it's plugged into the wall, that's what heats it up, therefore it's not makabel tumah. Since it's not makabel tumah, then you make the next jump, which is, and therefore anything which is not makabel tumah doesn't require tefillah. Umikol shekein tumah zok kisforet ha-ashvot Yaakov, all the more so it's not makabel tumah for tefillah kelim, therefore you don't have to toivel it. And then he says, "Loichein b'mecham," but that wouldn't apply to an urn. She'efshal ishtamesh gam kishehu talash, because you can use an urn when it's not plugged in. Now this is very important. People often quote this Rav Breish, this Chalkas Yaakov, and says, "No, Rav Bryce says that electrical equipment doesn't require tefillah because it's used plugged into the wall. That's not what he says. It's often misquoted. He says that if its only reasonable use is when you plug it in, that's called mechuba lekarka. That's called attached to the ground. Therefore, you have to think an urn. An urn, obviously, your normal use is when you plug it in to heat up the water. But you could use it to dispense cold water very easily. An urn has far more use when not plugged in than an electric immersion heater, which has no use when not plugged in. So too, a toaster is useless, really. Yeah, a toaster doesn't really do anything. What would you use a toaster or a sandwich maker for unless you plugged it in? What, to hold your bread? You could extend the Chelkas Yaakov to other things, but it would have to be something like the immersion heater that doesn't really do anything unless it's plugged in. So it wouldn't help you with an urn at all.
How many people use a Shabbos urn not plugged in?
No, you're correct. They don't. You're right. But since the question is not how many people use it, the question is, does it have any identity as a kli independent of being plugged in? And an immersion heater doesn't, because it's just a lump of metal, but a Shabbos urn does. It's still a kli. And if there were a water shortage, if they told you the water's going off at 2 o'clock, fill up what you can, then it would be a very good kli.
And plug it in.
An Englishman needs his cup of tea even if the water goes off. Yes. Yes. And that's true. When you go to these, dues, they use them for the Nitzilah Shaddai. So I think we understand where he's coming from.
Is that a kli? It's used for Nitzilah Shaddai.
You're not drinking water. No, it's a kli. It's used to hold the... It's not a kli suda. You wouldn't require to toivel it. Fine. Now, so there are many questions with Rav Reich. First of all, let's understand the limitations of Rav Reich, like I just mentioned. It doesn't apply to everything. Second of all, is that really called mechuba lekarka? Is that really attached to the ground? Is that the same as the range which is screwed down onto the floor? Or is that just a bit of a kvetch? Okay, it's plugged into the wall. First of all, you can move it around quite happily when it's plugged in. It's not really attached to anything. It's technically attached on a wire. Second of all, it's something which is in and out, in and out, in and out, called attached to the ground. Is that really attached? So look in Rav Vodna again. Rav Vodna is very unhappy. Number four. Go over the page. Do not be enticed, he says. The hat is to give a heter to electrical appliances. According to the people who want to say, don't be enticed to go down that opinion. Shepotim in a tefillah, that it's potter for tefillah because it's connected to the wall. The lefiani asaiti, in my opinion, the hevel v'ra'as ruach. Pretty strong words. I checked. Rav Vodna doesn't say this much. Meaning, there are poskim who talk like this all the time. In which case, if they say it's hevel v'ra'as ruach, okay, they say that about everything. But Rav Vodna is not one of these people. He's not happy. He thinks it's completely far-fetched to say this. Because I'll tell you something else. Even a bona fide kli, like a pot, which you then welded, let's say, to the ground. The potter in a tefillah, gam kein mefukpak, that's not even clear. In halacha, there's a shaila if I had a pot, which was a portable pot, and I screwed it to the ground. Is even that called mechuba lekarka? That might not be good enough, because it's not really designed to be attached to the ground. Only something which only works when attached to the ground. So if that's a question, then this is surely a question. Hadidan pshita da alpi alocha loy nikra mechuba. It's not called attached to the ground. Le'inyan ze lefatra mitzvila ve'ein la'arach bepashat. I have no intention of talking any more about something which is blindingly obvious. It's just nonsense. And Rav Moshe Sternbuch, also number five, he makes the point. He says, I don't like it because you plug it in and out all the time, and therefore it's not really a proper attachment. And therefore, people quote this a lot, but I don't know. Does it do it for you? I'm not sure. It's definitely a very famous svara. These days where people can attach things to their cars, there are cars now with regular plugs in them. Not just car plugs, but regular plugs. So you could plug this into the car, and then it's not mechuba lekarka at all, or to a battery pack. So maybe that's technology that's moved on since Rav Reich, but that's another approach. That's approach number five. Approach number six. Now, approach number six is the most complicated of all of them, and it's Rav Moshe Feinstein. Look at what he says. The normal halacha is, we have to focus here because this is hard. The normal halacha is that there's a piece of the kli which does not require tefillah, but it's
a subordinate or secondary part of the kli, then it all has to go in. Classic example, a knife with a plastic handle. The plastic handle, plastic doesn't require tefillah, let's say, because that's the majority position. The metal does require tefillah. So just dip the knife, metal bit, into the mikveh and hold the plastic out. You can't do that. Everything has to go in the mikveh. It's one kli. The whole kli has to go in. So according to that, if the kli has electrical parts and cooking parts, it's all one kli. It should really all go in. Says Rav Moshe, not so quick. Have a look here in number six. Uvadavah kelim shemavashlim be'elektri. Things which are electric. I'm on the third line. She'iyah shalatoyv lo mishum shemokum she'elektri ein lahavi b'mayim shi'talka. Same idea. You can't toivel it because the water will ruin the electrics. Hine, im heim kelim she'ein noitnim aleihem ha'machol atzmai. If it's a kli, first of all, he says like the crock pot. If it's a part of the metal that the food doesn't even come into, ala noitnim sham kedera acheret, where you put another pot in, she'eish bo ha'machol, is special, ein etzorek tefillah. Then for sure it doesn't require tefillah. Ala oisa kedera sheba ha'machol. That's not really our question. He's just telling you that the crock pot, only the pot, requires tefillah, not the electrical part. Fine. The imhu kazesh noitnim bo ha'machol. But if you do put food into the electrical part, into the metal part. Atzmah. Sarich tefillah, at first sight it does, prima facie does require tefillah. Aval kevan shekli ze oise shnei dvarim. Now look at the logic of Rav Moshe. This kli does two different things. Lemata hu makam shemuna chamachal, the bottom part, let's say, is where the food is put, is bashal to cook. Ulemale, and the top part, is chutei ha-elektri shehu ha-eisha mabashal. Two different parts of the kli. Sarich tefillah rak chetzi hakli hatachton kei shemitim im esham hamachol. You only need to toivel that bit of the kli that the food goes in, not the electrical parts of the kli. Umakum ha'elyon, and the upper part of the kli, shesham chutei ha'elektri, ein sarich tefillah, they don't require tefillah, but sarich tefillah rak chetzi hatachton v'lo ha'elyon. Now, va'ah shekli echad, but you're going to tell me, 1 second, this is one kli. It's like the knife with the plastic handle. How come I can just dip half the kli in the mikveh? How does that work? You're going to tell me it's one kli. Ein etzorek litzbul kol. I says, no, if you don't require the whole thing. Why? The loy niftal ha'elyon ha'tachton. Because unlike a knife with a plastic handle, where the plastic is batel, it's subordinate to the knife. The plastic doesn't have its own identity. Here it's not. The electrical part is chashiv in its own right. The hachshiv gam elyon lekli suda kevin de mishpamish hu lemakom ha'esh. Since this electrical part does something quite different to the part that holds the food, it's a whole different use. In terms of the utility, it's like two kelim which have been joined together, and therefore you only need to toivel the bit that the food goes in, not the bit that the electrics are in. That's Rav Moshe's chiddush. Yes.
I'm just thinking from a practical point of view. Let's say you have an urn.
Yes.
And you want to
not very helpful practically, you're right.
Right. You want to toivel the middle part, but to get to the...
So we will see that Rav Moshe, even if it's correct, is not very helpful. Because you can't... We'll give you an example. It could work with immersion heat. We'll give you an example of how that works in more practical ways soon. But in principle, let's first get it clear that Rav Moshe is saying that if you could just put in the bit that the food goes in and keep out the bit that the electrics are in, then Shalom Al Yisrael. Then that will work. He has one further problem, though, which is if you have the whole thing connected, then the bit that the electrics are covering will be a chatzitza for the tefillah, meaning anything which blocks the contact of the water to the bit that does need tefillah is a problem. So he says, how am I going to get around that? So look what it says in the last line. V'nishar rak mashe b'makam achiba lo yutval v'mayim. The only problem now is that we're not going to, the bit that does require tefillah, the water's not going to get to all the parts. It has to reach the parts that, you know, the beers cannot reach, I was going to say, but that's not what I was going to say. But who begin beta starim she'eilu chotetz became? Says, I'll give you a chiddush. The bit of the kli that does require tefillah that the water can't get to because the electrical box is stopping it is called beis hasadarim. Hasadarim. What's beis hasadarim? Beis hasadarim is the bit on the inside of something that requires tefillah that normally are not visible. Let me give you a bit of background here. If you're talking about a person, when a person goes to the mikveh, there cannot be any chatzitzas on the individual. Okay? On a Torah level, the chatzitza is something that blocks the water. The whole body has to go into the water, that's for sure. They can't toivel with one hand, you know, sticking outside the water. But if there's something covering a bit of the body, that's called a chatzitza. And that's usually no good. On a Torah level, if a chatzitza covers the majority of the body, someone's just been to a mud bath, okay? And they're makpid, meaning they don't want it there, they want to wash it off, that will invalidate the tefillah. On a rabbinic level, if it's either a majority or it's a minority that you're particular about, you don't want there, it will invalidate the tefillah. It's only going to be good if it's both a minority and something that you're not bothered if it stays there. And then for tefillat nashim, for women who go to the mikveh when they're married, we're even makpid on that. And if for whatever reason, even though you could leave your wedding ring on if you never take it off, then tefillat yadayim, because it's mute, the anal makpid, it's a small amount to cover the majority of your hand, and you're not particular to take it off, you always leave it on. For tefillah, for mikveh, for the whole body, then we would require you to toivel again. Now, the betach starim, the areas which are not normally open, do not require actual water to go in them. So, inside the mouth. You don't have to open your mouth when you go into the mikveh. The water doesn't have to go inside the mouth or under the arms. But there can't be a chatzitza there. That's why I have the issues with fillings and temporary fillings and all. Not getting into the halacha right now. Says Rav Moshe, but for a kli, we don't have a problem with a chatzitza in the inner parts, unlike for a person, and therefore it's fine. And therefore he said, since the only bit that can't get to the water is a hidden inner part of the kli, that for a kli we're not worried about a chatzitza, whereas for a person we would be, then it's okay. So how does that actually help us? So let me go over the page. We need to talk a bit about the Keurig. Because we will see how the Keurig works in a minute. Look at number 7, and you'll see in a minute practically what I mean by all of this stuff about chatzitza. The OU has the following on the Keurig. Number 7. Unlike most other hot water urns that can withstand being dunked in water, so long as they're properly dried, the Keurig machine has a digital component that will not survive getting wet. Additionally, even if one were to attempt to toivel a Keurig machine, the inner chamber will not fill with water. Water will only enter the inside chamber if it is pumped through, so tefillah is not really an option. Meaning even if you do stick it underwater, the water won't get in the bit, which is metal, you'll see in a minute. Ravelsky holds that we may view the Keurig machine as a plastic kli, because most of it's plastic, which is exempt from tefillah. This is because the entire visible machine is indeed plastic. The metal receptacle and element which are in the recesses mean betach starim, the hidden parts of the machine, are not accessible. Although there are two pins, which are more on the outside, that pierce and inject hot water into the K-cup, it is not clear that these pins require tefillah. It is possible that they are like a can opener. If one wishes to remove the pins and toivel them, with some cajoling, they can be removed, at least in some models. Now, in case you don't know what a Keurig looks like, just zip to page 9. Look at the last page of your sheet, and you can get a little bit of inspiration from this. Okay? Now, I don't have time to take you through the inner workings of a Keurig coffee machine. Suffice it to say that the coffee tastes good. But the only metal bits in this whole machine that we need to worry about is number 1, the tank. There is a hot water tank deep inside the machine. And again, Rav Moshe will say it doesn't require tefillah. It's deep in the base of Sarim, and if it does, the electrical parts which are blocking it is not a problem. And the other thing is the needles. The needles, when you put your little K-cup in it, two needles puncture. One of them has the water going in, one of them has the water coming out, and it flows through the coffee. Yeah? And Rabelski said, look, the needles really act as can openers. They're just there to open the little perforated part of the cup. You don't really need them to be metal. They're only metal because it goes through the paper. And really, it could be a plastic tube, therefore it's not really something that requires sealer, because the metal is incidental, if you like. Therefore, if you put all this together, you end up with a system that will allow you to not have to toggle your Keurig machine without relying on any of these other heterim. It's not because it's plugged into the wall. It's not because it's electrics and it might get ruined and therefore we don't toggle it. It's because the only metal bits have their own independent heterim, because of Rav Moshe, that the bits that heat up don't really require, the electrics, right, don't require tefillah, and the other parts do, but there's no problem with the chatzitza. So, if you want to take that view, the Keurig machine may indeed be something which is exempt. I'll leave you to look up afterwards to how, look carefully at how the machine works. If you want to get into taking your Keurig machine apart, we'll get to that in a minute. That's another option which we'll see if you know how to take it apart and put it together again. So that's the complicated one, Rav Moshe. Now, not everybody likes this heter of Rav Moshe, because they say, no, listen, if you have two independent parts which are joined together, then that's called two parts of a kli. But there's nothing independent about the electrics and the food parts. They're one integrated kli, and therefore you can't really see this as two kalim. It's a kvetch and a stretch to see this as two kalim, and therefore that line of thinking will not necessarily work. All of these ideas, by the way, all of these heterim are snifim lahatir. Meaning, none of them are blown away kind of, that's the end of the story. It's like a legal argument in court. Sometimes you have a legal argument that blows the case out of the water, and that's all you... Sometimes you have 8 or 9 minor points, each of which in and of themselves are not sufficient to reach the required burden of proof, but when you put it all together, you got a case. Okay? That's what we're dealing with here. Each one of these things you can pick holes in, but when you put them all together, you may indeed have a case. Number 8, or B7, if you look at the bottom of 4, let's go a bit faster, these are much easier. This is advice given by Tzomet. Tzomet, relying on Rav Moshe, say, look, if the electrical part, and this is when Rav Moshe becomes more practical, like you said before, you can't really put these urns in such a way that you can keep the electrics out. So it's not that much help. But Tzomet say, but what you can do is you can put a Ziploc bag or a plastic bag tightly around the electrical bit, and therefore the water won't get through the bag, it will only go into the urn. That you can do. Ah, but you put a bag around the part and it's in the water. The answer is, yeah, that bit doesn't require tefillah, does it? That's the electrical bit. If you rely on Rav Moshe, you haven't got a problem with a bag around the electrics, and therefore somebody give this solution based on Rav Moshe that bit doesn't need tefillah kelim. Anyway, so that's another option. Over the page to page 5. Another option is take it apart and get a Jew to put it back together again. Have a look in number 9. There's a Pitchei Tshuva. The Pitchei Tshuva was dealing with very, very large beer vats made of metal. The Jews got into brewing, and they had to toivel these enormous things, but they couldn't get them to a mikveh. There wasn't a mikveh big enough. They could have rolled them down to the sea, I suppose, but they would have never got there, and they would never got back. So he says, what am I going to do? Klei Suda. Kata v'sefer Chochmas Adam. You quote the Chochmas Adam, number 9 here, as follows. Hayurat HaGedolot. These big vats, Shemavashlim Bo Sheikha, that you brew beer in. Nearly the tzrichim tefillah. They need tefillah. They're klei suda. The afal pisha koyvim oisam umuchabrim lekarka. Even though you do screw them to the ground, because makam dina kli, they're still a kli. The fact that you screw to the ground won't help. And we talked about that before. The ein lahem takala ela sheyitbalein. You have to really put them in the mikveh, or yinkov behem nekev gadol, smack a big hole through them. Sheyitbatel mitaros kli, so they're not a kli anymore. And then a Jewish craftsman can repair it, because obviously if you put a large hole through a metal vat, you need somebody who is a welder to come and put it all together again. Yes. Oh, we'll get there right now. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, apply this to electrics, take something off it such that it won't work, and then put it back on again. A Jew should put it back on again, and now it's a Jewish-made kli. The question is, how broken does it need to be? So most poskim take the view, and I brought you here Rav Scheinberg in number 10, Yesh eitzel afarik ol levak lemitaros kli. There is an eitzel to take it apart, so it's not a kli legamre completely, but not in chadash, and make it in afresh al yidei uman Yisrael, through a Jewish craftsman. The az loy nikra kli akum, then it's not called a non-Jewish-made kli. The Heinukesh Kaven She'ein Hedyot, and here's the answer to your question. Since a Hedyot, I don't know how you describe a Hedyot here, an unskilled person, me, that's for sure, Ein Hedyot Boki Lahachziro, if a non-skilled person is not able to do it, Nirash Shebak Leminatora Kli, that's when you can say it's not a Kli anymore. Ukesh Yisrael Matakno Nasa Kli Chadash, and now it's not a new Kli. Etzala Yisrael. Ve'ein Alachi Yisfila. Aval B'mefarik Mechona, but often shehed yot yachol achzira, lo nita. just to take a plug off. It's not clean. To unscrew. Take one screw out and like a little bit off and then put it back on again. That doesn't work. He said it has to be taken apart to the extent that a regular person who is not skilled can't put it back together. I know there are rebbeim and yeshivas that take courses in how to take electrical appliances apart and put them together again. So that when the boys want a toy ball, they sit down and unscrew it all and have like 8,000 pieces on the table and put it all together again. Now I can unscrew everything. I just can't put anything together again. So I can do a half the job. I can be a chetzi rebbe, a chatzram, okay? But as far as maybe Rav Moshe makes sense to take the plug off. Now it's not a kli. Come on, of course it's a kli. Anyone can put the plug on. So maybe that helps. Maybe it doesn't. Next. By the way, if you take it all apart and put it together again, it will also invalidate the warranty, just so you know. And you can't turn around to the shop and then say, well, my Rebbe put it all together again. So your Rebbe doesn't work in our store. Right, fine. Here's another Eitza, number 11. Eitza number 9. Give it to a non-Jew and borrow it back. Look here in the Shulchan Aruch. Im shachach, v'lo yitzvil kli me'erev Shabbos. If it was Friday, you forgot to toivel something you really need to use on the Shabbos. Or me'erev yontif, or erev yontif. Did nena lo oivit kachav in the matana. Give it to a non-Jew on Shabbos. V'achakach yishalenu mimenu. And then borrow it back. U'mutzel yishtamesh bo. And then you can use it, because now it's owned by a non-Jew. If you borrow it temporarily, then that's his kli. His kli doesn't need to be toivled. You're just borrowing it. Says the Ramah. V'chein yasav filu b'chol. You can do this on a weekday as well. V'makam she'ein lo mikveh if you don't have a mikveh. There's no way you can get to a mikveh. So this is your b'dieved solution. So do the same thing. Take your electrical appliances. Go to your non-Jewish neighbor, knock on the door, and say, it's difficult in Israel, or you go to your Filipino, you know, whatever, there's a load of people around the corner, and say, I am giving you my curry coffee machine, and I'd like to borrow it back again. Now, of course, the problem with this is you have to actually get them to understand what you're doing, and they have to actually agree to it, you know, in terms of Hilchos Momonos, and it not just seem like some kind of weird Jewish game that you're playing. And also, the Taz is a problem. The Taz says, this only works on a temporary basis. He says, you can't do this on a permanent basis because then it's obviously yours. Who are you trying to kid? He said, it's a harama. It's just a loophole that you're trying to persuade yourself and other people. It doesn't belong to you. So the Taz says, it doesn't work on a permanent basis. It's only a b'dieved on a temporary for Shabbos or if there's no mikveh. But okay, maybe not everyone agrees with the Taz. Maybe you could put a case together that it would work. Yes, sir.
What about rentals?
If you rent it and it belongs to a non-Jew, then that's a bona fide rental arrangement and you're borrowing. The question is, how long would you need to rent it for it to be effectively yours in halacha? I don't know the answer to that question. If you rent it for a week, fine. If you rent it for 5 years, I don't know. Good question. Another solution. Make it hefka. Okay? So it's hefka. And you declare that this is hefka, this urn doesn't belong to me, this sandwich maker, waffle maker doesn't belong to me, it's hefka. And if it's hefka, then it doesn't require tefillah because you don't own it. So does this work? So again, is it really hefka? Are you serious? If you have a lot of gvura, there is a story, so they say, that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, I tried to clarify this, I couldn't get clarity on it, declared all of his kitchen appliances, which were electronic, hefka. Electrical. And they didn't belong to him, and I'm sure he really meant it, and he probably was masking them in front of 3 people, and I heard that he even said you have to say to the clerk in the shop, when you're buying it, I'm buying this, but really it's hefka, kind of thing. And you try to work out how to say this to the person in Target when you buy your machine. There is a story that a bocher on Purim stole his toaster, took away his toaster. And said, it's hefka. I heard the Rav Aaron stuff is all hefka. I like the toaster. I keep the toaster. After Purim, of course, when things sobered up, he went back to Rav Aaron and said, I'm terribly, terribly sorry. Here's the toaster. And Rav Aaron wouldn't accept it. He said, no, it was hefka. You made a good kinyan on it. And it's your toaster, the simcha. Now, I don't know if that's a true story. And I don't know if it is what Dr. Tover would have said about it. That's another good question. His wife, Rebbetzin Lichtenstein. But anyway, that is one option if you're really serious about it. Maybe that's something you could do. Maybe you could go one stage further. Rav Shlomo Zalman suggests maybe, which is make it hefka and then be koina it back again. That's one stage even more of a haroma loophole because now you do own it, but you bought it from where? From hefka. You bought it from Hefke. It's only a problem if you buy it from a non-Jew. You didn't buy it from a non-Jew. The question is, are we still serious here? Or are we now getting a little bit you know, beyond the realms of possibility. Another possibility, B12. Let's look at number 6. These are all quite simple. Make a partnership with a non-Jew. Go into partnership. Look at the OU again in number 13. If one sells a portion of the Keurig machine to a non-Jew, this would alleviate any question of tefillah, because even a kli that is owned b'shutfus, partnership, with a non-Jew is exempted from tefillah. The proper way to accomplish such a sale would be to accept some money as part payment, kinyan kesef, and then have the non-Jew pick up the Keurig to show that he's taking partial ownership. Likewise, if an office has a coffee service contract that supplies and owns the Keurig machine, there's no chi of tefillah. This may be your point about rental, okay? Since as long as the service company is at least partially owned by non-Jews. And this is, there are offices, Hamish offices, you'll say, what's with your Keurig machine? They'll say, no, we have a shutfus with a non-Jew. Again, it'll work if the non-Jew understands what's going on. You can't just grab someone in the street and say, here, be a partner in my dosa. Like what's going on? There's a maisa in Alan Shvut 2 years ago, so just before Pesach, someone approached Rav Weitman, the Rav of the Yeshuv, and said, I forgot to sell my whiskey. So they ran to the, so he said, we can do a special, they'd already finished all the Mechirat Chometz. So they ran to the fellow, the Arab who runs the store there, that has his Arab store, and who normally does the Mechirat Chometz. And they said to him, we need you to do another Mechirat Chometz. And he said, fine, say that. What is it? They said, whiskey. He said, no way. I'm not owning whiskey. This is a real sale, right? You keep telling me this is a real sale. He says, I'm a former Muslim. I don't have alcohol in the house. I won't touch the whiskey. I won't have it in the house, even if I'm not Jewish. So then they were really panicking. They ran around the Yeshiva. And they found a Filipino guy, and they said, will you do Mechirat Chometz for the whiskey? And the challenge was getting the guy to understand what on earth is going on. I remember once, this is a true story, when we made an Erev. This is before the Northwest London Erev was live. We had a courtyard in our building in Hendon, in Vernon Court, if anyone knows what that is. And we made an Erev inside. And part of it is I had to give a Schiras Rishus to the caretaker on behalf of the landlord that had to buy the rights of the non-Jews that lived there. So I went to the caretaker, I gave him £10, and said, he said, what's this for? I said, this is to buy the rights of all of the non-Jews to use the courtyard on Shabbos. He said, what? I said, this money is for you on behalf, and I told him about 3 times. He looked at the money, looked at me, and he said, I always like Jewish people. He said, I always like Jewish people. I'll do it for you, then. No, it's my pleasure. It was so funny. Let me go on a little bit. I haven't got time for questions, but let's go on a little bit. Let's look at 4 final possibilities. I might not have time to run through all the sources, but the Helkas Yaakov in number 14 says, I give you another suggestion. Why don't you block up the holes with something semi-permanent, wax, glue, to stop the water going in, use it for 7 days in a way that it works blocked up, you can use it somehow, like to store water or whatever, then the thing that is in it will be batel, it will not be considered a chatzitza, and then you can toggle it, and then you can take the little plugs out, meaning it will stop the water getting in through the little cracks and holes, and then you can take the stuff out. But it has to be there for 7 days. Okay, that actually could work. The problem is, it doesn't really work for modern-day equipment, because it's not just one hole. Back in the day when there was just like a hole where the wire went in, so you could block that up. Now the whole thing is porous, and you put it under the water, it will very quickly fill up with water. So in theory that would work, but in practice, does it help? 14. Here's one that I've done myself. Somit suggests. There is something called hashaka. What is hashaka? Hashaka is where there is a body of water that comes into contact with a mikveh, even for a second, as in like a little nishika. Shaka means a contact. That's hence the word neshek, nishika, hashaka. It's all the same, Shoresh. If the water comes into contact with a mikveh, then that will become mikveh water. That's good. It transfers through. So says Somit, this is what you can do. If you don't want to keep your urn under the water for 25 seconds until it's all filled up, because you can see, I've done this, you know, when you put your urn in, not only the top of the urn is filling up, but you can see all the air bubbles coming out of your electrical. So do the following. Fill it with regular water, or maybe even better, mikveh water, yeah? So it's full to the top. Now, of course, that's not valid as a tefillah, but then put it straight in and out in a second, into the mikveh and out again, and of course the water which is in the kli already
will join underwater with the mikveh water. It will all become part of the mikveh, and then you can whip it straight out again. And you don't have to hold it under there the amount of time that it would take to fill the kli. This has the advantage of you not having to keep it immersed for that long. And it actually works to some degree. They also say you could even tape up the holes underneath. But that works. The problem with that is as follows. Two practical problems. Number one, everybody at the mikveh will scream at you that it doesn't work, because that's what happened to me. And number two, it's very heavy to lift up an urn which is full of water and put in the mikveh. So you may find yourself in the hospital after the mikveh. But halakhically it could work. Next, number 15. We're not quite finished yet. Number 15 is the Rav Brice says the follows. If a woman is scared to go to the mikveh, what should she do? Why would she be scared? The mikveh could be in a cave, could be anywhere. So another woman can go in with her and hold her hand. Shulchan Aruch says she can hold her hand. But not too tightly, otherwise it stops the water going into her hand, loosely. Or the woman who's holding her hand can put her hand in the mikveh, so that it's got water on it. As long as it's wet, she can hold the woman's hand, because then that water itself is connected with the mikveh, and the mikveh is a good mikveh. The same is true with tefillas kelim. When you dip the keli, don't grip it with like a vice-like grip. You dip it loosely, or you wet your hand with the mikveh water, so you put it. So says Rav Brice, you know something? I've got an idea. Dip your hand in the water, and then put your wet fingers around the holes that you don't want the water to go through into the electrical areas. And that way, the water around your fingers will be not be a chatzitz, and it's good. Or even better, take some cotton wool, which is wet, dip it in the mikveh so it's moist, and then push that into the areas you don't want the water to go in. Okay, it won't really ruin the equipment that much. And then you'll stop the water from going in. So that's a good answer. As long as, again, you don't have that many holes. Some equipment, you'd have to have 85 fingers to go around every single bit of the equipment, and it won't really work. But he gives that as an option. Two more options. Toivel in snow. Okay? Can you toivel in snow? So this is a big shaila. The Chochmas Adam says that in soft snow, and it has to be soft, otherwise you hack through the snow to get the stuff in, maybe you can toivel glassware, he says, in snow. Glassware has a rabbinic obligation. What's the problem with snow? Why might it not work? Well, is snow considered to be, is all the water connected in order to that be a valid mikveh? So, according to one opinion, yes. According to another opinion, no. One opinion says snow is okay as long as it melts. Okay, but that's maybe how you can fill a mikveh in the Andes in Peru. You get snow and you melt the snow. But can you do while it's still snow? So that's already a shaila. And there are some poskim that suggest, Chalkus Yavka brings this as a suggestion, maybe you could toivel in snow. Maybe it only works for rabbinic. That's one possibility. And also, you're going to have to live somewhere where there's enough snow. And you have to have a mikveh volume of snow. 40 seah of snow. And then you have the lovely shaila, which is, do the air spaces between the snowflakes add up to the 40 seah of mikveh? If ever you wanted to have a conversation at the Shabbos table, which is going to excite and upset everybody by the same token, then have that. Last two points, and then we'll finish. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very interesting suggestion. Maybe he doesn't need tefillah at all. He says, a toaster? An old-fashioned toaster? What's the purpose of a toaster? What does a toaster even do to your bread? It just dries it out. A toaster doesn't do anything meaningful to the bread anyway, says Rav Moshe. And therefore, since it doesn't really do anything but dry out the bread is edible before, it doesn't do anything. It's just a dryer, a bread dryer. And therefore, you don't need to toivel it at all. Most people would say no. The truth is that toasters do something. That's why people buy them. It's not just a load of fussy people that like their toast a little bit brown. But that's maybe one option. Another option is you could say there's a shaila whether you need to toivel anything you buy from a company. Is a company non-Jewish? No, a company is an incorporated body, which in halacha has a different entity, identity entirely. Again, none of these things on their own are good enough to add up to a full-blown heter, but when you put them all together, then that's not bad. We made a bit of a case, I think, going forward here, and therefore you need to put more thought into this. If you think of other inventive ways to deal with the problem, then please let me know, and I'll add them onto the sheet for next time I give the share. The last thing I just mentioned here, and I'll just finish with just for 10 seconds, there are people that say, look, are you trying to get away from mitzvahs here? The Torah says toivel it, so toivel it, and if you can't toivel it, then don't use it.
We're not meant to be trying to escape mitzvahs through loopholes. And that's the proper conversation we need to have. What really is a haram, and when does it work? When doesn't it work? We need to have that conversation. And this is a hashkafi point which needs thought. I just finished with a story. I once heard from a fellow in Hendon. He went to a dinner, Jewish dinner, where there was a priest, the vicar actually, was invited. It was a cross-community affair. And he had mazona spread. And he picked up his mazona spread. And he started eating it. And the vicar turned around to him and said, I hope you don't mind me asking, but I was under the impression that you have to ritually wash your hands, say a blessing, and then say special thanks to God for having made the bread. How come you don't do this? So the Jewish guy very excitedly says, no, this is Mazonah's bread. This is a half. We made the bread in such a way that you don't have to do Netilat Yadayim, you don't have to wash, you don't even have to bench, it's a machaya. So the vicar turns around and says, what are you thinking? God gives you a mitzvah to thank him for the good food. And you're excited that you just discovered a way to circumvent the mitzvah? I don't get it. Of course he doesn't get it. He's not Jewish. But we need to give a little bit of thought to that, because it's a serious point as to how this works. We have to end there, but I'll take questions afterwards. Okay. Thank you.